A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The following big interview was posted in full for our socios, our members, our friends, our supporters at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. And that was last season, 2019-20. Sign up there and you'll get every interview we produce before it's released on the main feed, plus the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You'll also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. And what's more, you'll be supporting us. You'll be keeping this independent podcast on the road. Thank you. Even if you never watched Andrea Orlandi play, even if you're not a big Barcelona or Swansea or Brighton fan, even if you don't follow Italian second division football or Indian football, Andrea Orlandi is somebody I've been working with on La Liga television recently, and he's extraordinary. He's easily one of the best television analysts of football I've ever worked with or listened to. He'll tell us interesting things about a future guest on the big interview, Brendan Rodgers, who he counts to be the best, spoiler, amongst a group of coaches which he had, which includes Gus Poyet, Michael Laudrup, Frank Rijkaard, Paulo Sousa, and on and on and on. You're going to love Andrea Orlandi because he's exceptional about explaining the beauty of football, a life in football, and he speaks better English than what I do. See you on the other side. You also reached the cup semi-final, right? With Alaves.
With Alaves, yes.
Correcto?
Yes.
Mendizorroza. Yes. What's it like?
Mendizorroza, now it's very different from what it was when I was there. Because not the stadium, the atmosphere. I mean, now it's improved a lot, Graham.
I didn't know that. I thought then maybe it would still be the same.
I signed for a club that was in the Europa League, in the UEFA at the time.
You signed for them only, two years?
2 years after that, yes.
The Liverpool final.
Yes,
They are in the final of what's now the Europa League.
Yes.
And one of the greatest European finals ever.
Absolutely. But the season I signed, the team got relegated. You know, I was only 17. But the team got relegated from La Liga. We had a season in Segunda División with Pepe Mel, where we were hot favourites to get promoted. We had Martín Palermo coming into the team.
The big lump of Argentinian strikers,
exactly.
The Boca Juniors.
Exactly.
Missed three penalties in a match once, but we'll forget that for the moment.
And he gave me good advices as well. I remember him. I talked to you before about, you know, people wanting to make these good crosses, these unbelievable crosses, and he said to me, "You don't need to do that. You just put it in the box because I'll do the rest." And then I thought, okay, you know, it's not about looking good, you know, and look, you know, myself look good. It's actually helping the team. So Martín Palermo was a really nice guy as well. So we had a great team, and we couldn't get promoted that year. And the fans kind of didn't follow the team as much as they do now. You know, they lost that, you know, that feeling. You know, at Vitoria you have the Baskonia, you know, the basketball team, which is big, and at the time was bigger than Alaves. But then again, Vitoria is a great city. The club had two training grounds, they still have now, It was, everything was set up brilliantly. It was well organized. The guy that signed me, for Alavés now is the sports director of Atletico Madrid, Luis Rodríguez, you know, alongside Andrea Berta. And it was a great club. I mean, it was a great experience, and it really helped me because I needed to get out of my house. You know, I come from a family, Italian parents. I was born here in Barcelona, and I had an easy life at home. My parents had money at the time, and I needed to get out and just do it by myself. You know, I thought, I really felt that I needed it. I needed it to my career, to develop myself, not only as a player, but as a person.
Yeah, you toughen up. With inverted commas, you become a man, but also you need to be exposed to new challenges, risks, people being tough, no parents to go home to look after you.
Exactly.
You have to change.
Exactly. And Vitoria for me was crucial. It's a beautiful club, Alaves. Obviously, when I was there then, we couldn't get promoted that season. Peterman took over. You remember?
Dimitri Peterman. Maybe with Jesus Gil, the craziest club owner Spain has ever seen, maybe? Or the craziest?
Graham, the speeches of Dimitri Peterman, I should have recorded.
What do we tell people? He was a Ukrainian?
Yes.
I think he had some sort of Olympic athlete back
then. He was an athlete living in America.
Or some... Did he throw the discus or what did he do?
Something like that.
But he's a big unit, right?
Exactly, yeah. Very big. Now, he's the chairman getting dressed as the player and taking the warm-up for training. So it's like, what is this? Then he had his hammer, the car. He put this big, the speakers. So we had hip-hop music for the whole session. It was absolute hell for 2 hours. But we got promoted to La Liga with Dimitri Peterman because we had great players.
And he was in a row with the federation because he didn't have a license and he was pretending he wasn't the coach, but he thought he was.
We had Chuchikos as a coach, but it was Dimitri Peterman, you know, picking up the team. It was a crazy experience, Graham. For a young player, you know, coming through, it was difficult for me.
So Oliver Burke, our Scottish guy who's there right now, is not going to have the same experience, but he's at a club that he should cherish.
No, the club is fantastic. Now the fans are back with the team. It's a beautiful city. You know, you got everything at Vitoria. It was a moment where, you know, the economical problems started as well. There was financial problems. So it was difficult for me.
But you do reach the Copa semi-final. I am right about that.
Yes, you are right. I played in the Copa del Rey against Valladolid. We reached the semi-finals against Zaragoza. We didn't get beat. We drew at home 1-1. And we drew at La Romareda 0-0.
And this is the Zaragoza that will go on to win it, right?
They won it against Real Madrid. The Galacticos Real Madrid at Montjuic. Yes. Yeah. That was a year. And I remember playing against Zaragoza and you know, seeing, you know, the first... you know, probably the special players, you know, that I saw in my career, you know, David Villa being one of them, that I was really impressed with him. I remember that game at La Romareda. I thought, wow, this player is, you know, this is what football is all about. This is what La Liga is all about, you know, different level, different stories. And I want to be at that level. And I remember, you know, a packed full stadium at La Romareda. We couldn't make it. We were a Segunda División team playing against a good La Liga team. But still, to make it into the semi-finals was big for Alaves.
Can you tell me how many European or international trophies your managers won? If you can, I can. So, dear listeners, we're talking to a guy, and already I think he's done something special for you. I feel this. They call it piel de gallina here. The hairs in the back of the neck are standing up because you were with the greats and you've described them beautifully. Well, I want to look at your CV. Your managers, or your principal managers, between them won 24 international trophies, either as coach or player. Your managers won 8 Champions Leagues. And I'm going to list them now. So we know about Rijkaard, Pepe Mel, he didn't win so many European trophies. Rijkaard, Pepe Mel, Roberto Martinez, Paulo Sousa, Brendan Rodgers, Gustavo Poyet, Oscar Garcia, Michael Laudrup.
Yeah.
Dude. Some pretty shit hot football people love to have you as their player. You confused me now because I do some research. You told me that... you said that it was Paulo Sousa persuaded you to come to Swansea.
No, to stay at Swansea.
Because Roberto Martinez is the guy, a fellow Catalan.
Yes.
I don't know what became of him, but maybe his career stayed quite nice. When you leave Alaves, you're taking a bet on yourself. And yes. You said that you read people well. So I guess you don't know Roberto too well, like maybe you knew him, but when he says to you, come to Swansea. I guess you say, where is that?
Yes, absolutely. I'll tell you the story. He saw me playing for Barcelona's first team in the Copa Catalunya that we spoke before. And he's friends with Jordi Cruyff.
Very close friends.
Yes. So Jordi Cruyff, I knew him from Alavés. He calls me and says, listen, Andrea, there is this manager, Roberto Martinez. He's a good friend of mine. Obviously, I didn't know anything about him. He's the coach of Swansea. Swansea, he told me Swansea as the Chelsea's League One. Chelsea's from League One. So he's a club that, you know, they're going to win the league. They want to get promoted to the championship. You know, they're ambitious, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, okay, but where is Swansea? I didn't have a clue where Swansea was. So I checked. I thought, okay, that's Wales. I'll speak to him, you know, no problem. So Roberto calls me. Andrea, can you come to Swansea? I was under contract. I shouldn't talk about this, but I will do that for you and the listeners. So it's done. It's happened.
Listeners, this isn't going to be like front page headlines.
So they pay me a flight. So I go with my dad. And we went to Swansea. So we landed in Bristol. We had this guy, Hugh Lake, the player's liaison from Swansea.
I think he's still there.
He's still there, yeah. Lakey. And he just puts the CD on the car. He had an old BMW, I remember, about Swansea songs. And it was that drive was an hour, 45 minutes of just Swansea songs. Where I couldn't speak any English. My dad, you know, could barely speak a bit. We arrived at Swansea, a big headache, because honestly, my head was going to explode. I didn't want to tell him, you know, the songs were a bit too much.
Put that music off.
So we arrived to Swansea, and then we go to the hotel. They put me in the best hotel at Swansea, and we go to the restaurant. Roberto Martinez is there, well-dressed, you know, very educated. And he tells me about Swansea, you know, the idea of Swansea, the ambition, the plan, 4 years in the Premier League. I said, okay. And he goes, let's have a look at the stadium. So we go to the stadium. He shows me the stadium. And he goes, because Roberto liked that, I can see, you know, the fans there, the Jack Army. I can see them singing your name, blah, blah, blah. So he showed me all about it. I said, okay, Roberto, that's great. Now I have a contract. So what can we do? And he said, no, we cannot pay. I said, well, that maybe, you know, this is not going to happen. But I said, thank you very much, for the opportunity you gave me to come here to know the club. So I just come back to Spain, start the pre-season with Alavés. What happens is Alavés goes into administration. So now there's the opportunity to go free. So I waited my options, and I had a big offer from Greece, from Aris Saloniki. Or a really bad offer from Swansea in terms of...
The financial difference between Swansea and Aris was huge.
Mm-hmm. And adding to that, you know, my family lost everything. So my dad lost his job. So all the good position we had disappeared. So my dad had to sell the house, and it was all...
Financial security is now vital, not just for you,
but for my family. So I have a sister. My mom and dad, obviously, they lost the house, they lost the job. So it's all on me. And what do? You take the money, or you take the opportunity and say, okay, maybe now I'm not going to have the money, but...
How did you make that decision?
It was difficult, Graham. I didn't sleep. I lost a lot of hair. It was great. I was under a lot of pressure. I cried. But then I thought, I could see ahead and thought, listen, you know, maybe Greece now is the money, but in 2 years it's me done. My career is done. Swansea is a great opportunity to beat myself up and become a Premier League player, which was my dream. It wasn't easy, but I took the Swansea way, and obviously it worked. It could have gone, you know, either way.
Maybe. But in the moment, I think it says a lot for your analytical side, and by then your faith in yourself. You talked earlier on about self-confidence or sufficient confidence, maturity, in order to back yourself or do the right things. And in that instance, you took decidedly the more risky route.
Absolutely, yes.
And I think many, many people, intelligent or stupid, would have said, look, the money now is the big thing. And nobody really could have criticized them for that. So whatever criteria you used to reach your decision, they were good ones.
And my friends used to tell me, oh, you are crazy, where are you going? What is League One? You know, Segunda B in England. You don't know the league, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, no, this is the right, decision. You know, like Roberto Martinez really made me believe that that was the right decisions. And once I signed the contract, Hugh Lay gave me a bag with my training kit. And he goes, well, you know, I'm picking you up at 4 o'clock, you know, get changed and then I'll pick you up. And I'm thinking, why do I have to get changed in the hotel, you know, if there's a training ground? So I didn't get changed. But once we got into the training pitch, I understood why. There was no dressing room. So players were driving on their kits straight into the
so
pitch.
So they're wearing the kits driving.
They're wearing the kit driving, just put their boots on and just train, back in the cars, go home and get showered. So I was getting changed in this car park, and I'm thinking,
listen, in British car parks, that's a dangerous thing to be doing.
It was,
people can read the wrong signs.
But Graham, it was raining, it was cold already. It was 1st of September, because I signed the last day of the transfer window, and it was muddy, the pitch was muddy. We didn't have lights to train. It was, and then again, I went back to the hotel, and I called my girlfriend, my wife now, and I said, what have I done? You know, this is crazy. But then again, my debut was at Elland Road, 32,000 full stadium packed.
Special atmosphere, special stadium,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Elland Road for me is my favorite stadium in the UK. The atmosphere there is rocking. I mean,
did you know about their history at all? I guess
I knew about Leeds.
Barcelona was a thing way before you were born, but it's part of Leeds Barcelona and the Cruyff team, and Leeds knocking Barca out is part of history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember them. I actually bought the Leeds shirt, the Nike one, when they played in the Champions League against Barca. You know, wow. I liked the badge. I liked the team. They had good players. Obviously, Viduka. I remember Alan Smith, Ian Hart, all these players. So I thought, okay, that's different. You know, this is why I came here, you know, to play in front of these crowds, these stadiums. I remember I was coming on. I was going to make my debut. We were 0-0. As I was coming on, they scored the first one. I come on, and the ball comes to me. That was my first ball in English football. And I remember the name of the player, David Pratton. So I thought, well, this is Spain. You know, I'll have time to control the ball and play. So this guy comes at the back of me, just pushes me away. I just landed 3 yards away of where I was. He takes the ball, shots, and scores. Oh. So I thought, and then my teammates were looking at me like, what are you doing? And I thought, okay, this is a wake-up call. Welcome to England. But then I played well. We lost the game 2-0. But then I understood straight away that...
This quickly?
Yes, that I had to change. It took me 5 months to change, Graham, to get used to it, to the training regime, to the physical part of it, to the rhythm. And then I injured my knee as well, which didn't help.
Yeah.
So I was out for the rest of the season. That first season was really difficult, obviously because what I said about my parents, the adaptations as well. Roberto, in a way, took me to Swansea, but now I thank him for that. He left me and the other, you know, Spanish players. He didn't help us too much because he wanted us to make it ourselves.
It's called tough love.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, you have to find your way. You have to find the language. You have to cope with the food, the temperature, the language,
everything. And now I thank him for that. At the time, it was difficult, a struggle. So that first year was really difficult, but we got promoted to the Championship. The first 5 months were like this, where I was stopping, I was fouled, or I thought I was fouled, and the referees never gave me those fouls, and the fans got a bit frustrated with me as well. And now when I see, when I watch the games here, I can't have that. It's like, you know, I think, why is it not running? So why is it stopping?
Your heritage now is Catalan, Italian, Welsh, English.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yes. But Roberto said one thing to me. There's two options here. Either you stay here for 6 months and want to go back home, or you will stay here for 10 years. And, you know, I took the second option. So I stayed in England for a long time because I loved it.
I want to, again, get your witness status, because Swansea didn't only come up, and I think you feel proud of their pride in being the first Welsh club in the Premier League,
yes.
Right? Which is a big deal to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like this to Cardiff right?
Yeah.
You then go on to train probably only for a couple of weeks with Loudrup, a little bit with Paulo Sousa, who changes your position. But the guy who fascinates me is Brendan Rodgers.
Yes.
Who's an extraordinary communicator.
Absolutely, yeah.
Really talented coach. He's currently very in vogue at the moment. But I remember him calling me from when he was your coach. He knew I was here. He got my number. I knew of him. he'd come through the ranks at Chelsea. He'd seen things that encouraged him, and he wanted to come and watch Pep's Barcelona training. I said, listen, mate, I will help you, but you're very associated with Mourinho's Chelsea, and Pep and Mourinho, I'm not so, you know, you better look at... But now, he's a really clever man, because having nearly won the title at Liverpool and changed things at Liverpool, to go to Scotland and advance your career is a big achievement.
Yeah.
My country now is seen as a backward, yeah, or a backward step, and it hasn't been for him. Could Brendan as easily have done what he did with Swansea if Roberto Martinez's original architect work hadn't been there?
I think
they blend?
They do blend, and I think that he chose Swansea because of that, because he had an experience at Reading where he got sacked, so his career was in a difficult moment, and he took a risk coming to Swansea, but he knew that philosophy worked for him, because, as you say, he's a big fan of Pep Guardiola, of Barcelona. After, you know, I remember on Mondays going to his office talking about the Barca game. He said, mi amigo, he used to say it to me, because he likes to speak a bit of Spanish as well, and it was funny the way he was doing it. Mi amigo, you know, well, what do you think about the game?
So Sky's coverage of Spanish football was big for him, big for you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, listen, I love Sky. I love the, you know, Revista de la Liga. I was always there watching Spanish football, and he was a big fan of Barca, the style of play, and then he loved it when they called us Swansea-lona. because it was the Swansea way, because we wanted to play football from the back, and for me, Roberto Martinez, he did great, you know, that transition from British old style 4-4-2 to 4-3-3, he made that, he was brave enough to do that. Then Paulo gave us, you know, the tactical side of it, because we were really good at going forward, but we couldn't defend really well. And then Brendan was the perfect blend, with the perfect mix between Roberto and Paulo. Because tactically he was good, but then he wanted us to play and play attractive football and be focused as well on the...
Try to give us some examples of what it was that Brendan was teaching or asking that brought the mix together.
It was, first of all, he liked the possession, but he always said possession with penetration.
Good.
I mean,
yeah.
You need to have that...
Not for no reason.
Exactly, not for no reason. We had a rule that we had to get the ball back within 5 seconds. If you didn't get the ball back within 5 seconds, there was a punishment. So you made sure that you got that ball back.
Then tactically, in a match though, if you don't win the ball back after 5 seconds,
then you have to regroup.
What are the instructions about how to regroup?
There was, depending on where the ball was, we had a way of doing it. For example, if we, let's say we lose the ball on the right wing and we weren't able to recover it, then we had to regroup and reshape and wait, you know, on the halfway line. In a way, so there was always, depending on where we lost it, we had the right movements, and so we did the right movements to recover position and, you know, and be solid at the back.
How similar, never mind the quality of players, how similar to the Guardiola Barca that you were watching in concept?
Well, it was similar because we were a team. We had pacey wingers, we had Nathan Dyer, Scott Sinclair, hard-working players as well, so they were not afraid of go out and you know, impress. We killed teams in the championship. I mean, we outplayed, you know, big teams with bigger budgets, a lot bigger budgets. We had one of the lowest because we had this idea. You know, we were playing from the back. They couldn't get near us. You know, some games we were unplayable. So. And then we had the other side of it as well, because in the UK, okay, if you play only fancy football, you don't get anywhere. You don't go anywhere. So, I mean, you need the other side as well, the second balls, you know, the intensity. And we were always first to the second balls. It took us a little bit. It took us a while. But once we got going, you know, we made it into the playoffs and won the playoffs at Wembley against Reading.
That must have been quite a special 3-4 days. Look, you're a bit pissed off not to, but you've got them there and you've taken them up.
I'll tell you the story.
Wembley is a great experience for you, but over that weekend, because it's one of the great four or five days of my life, in that we finished the Revista, last day of the season, we got into the Thames in Richmond, we have an extremely wild party. We've got karaoke singing and so stay up all night. I go straight onto television on Saturday morning, having not been to bed. Only my dad notices phones and says, "Did you have a big night, Dad?" Yeah. BBC Breakfast TV, Martin Ferguson, Alex Brother for lunch in London, and off to the game. Reporting the game at Wembley. It was quite a good game. Into the dressing room afterwards with Piqué and Xavi and the trophy. And a little anecdote that I mentioned in the Barca book, I wrote about Xavi stopping to have a conversation with me about how I described the game, and then coming away and thinking, that's one of the most magical experiences of my life. But I didn't have a promotion party to come on the Monday like you did. So you live the same. You live Barcelona taking over London, playing the best game of football possibly the Champions League's ever seen. I don't know how you partied or didn't party or whatever. Brendan and you must have been in contact during the whole game. And then Monday you're promoted to the Premier League.
It was a big weekend. I remember we were training near London, and the morning after the Champions League final, we went to Wembley to have a look at the stadium, to see the pitch, to kind of got used to the stadium, and it was all cleaned up already. And I thought, wow. And there was already the Swansea badge, on one side, the Reading one on the other. So I'm thinking, wow, this is good organization. So, I mean, the morning after the Champions League final, everything was, was ready for our final the next day. So for me...
So you didn't go to watch Barca?
I didn't go...
Was there ever a question of trying to break curfew, sneak out? Did Brendan go? Was it in question?
No. It was... No, because for us was crucial. I mean, it was a life-changing game, 2 days after. So for me, I'm someone that it's quite focused. And man, when there was a big game, but not only because it was the playoff final, any game that I've played in my career, 2-3 days before, it's me done. I'm focused. When I became a dad, I slept on a different room. I took it very seriously because I needed to be at 100% ready for that game. Otherwise, I would let my teammates and the fans down, myself down first. So
this is echoes of Sinetti, and you really learn from that.
Yeah, exactly.
You really learned.
Exactly, yeah. So, no. I watched the game on TV. I celebrated a little bit after. But obviously we had the playoff final, which was so important for the club. Because what happened was, the year before, we missed the playoffs by 1 point, and Blackpool got into the playoffs, and Blackpool got promoted. And I remember Hugh Jenkins, the chairman, the pre-season after, going, "Listen, if Blackpool did it, we have to do it. So this season, the target is promotion." So I thought, wow, this for Swansea, is a big statement. And it was £90 million at the time, there for Swansea to
each?
Take.
This wasn't the Prima.
No.
Okay. We like to be clear on the beginning.
So it was very important for Swansea, as a club to actually progress to win that game. If you see Swansea now, obviously, as I said before, we didn't have a training ground. We used to wash our own kids. The club, to make a step forward, needed that win, needed that money, and needed to get into the Premier League. So there was big pressure as well for us. And that day at Wembley, I was out of the 16. And the morning of the game, Brendan calls me and goes, "Andrea, can you come into my room?" I was sharing rooms with Angel Rangel. And I say, "Angel, I think I'm out. I think if he calls me, it's..." And he goes, no chance. What happened again that season, Graham? I was playing up until January, and then I got injured. Joe Allen comes into the team. I didn't make it back into the first 11. I couldn't do it. Joe Allen did great, and he deserved to keep his place. Fair play. But I was on the bench for the last games. I was on the bench, in the semi-final against Nottingham Forest. So the minimum I was expecting was being on the bench at Wembley.
Claro.
So I got into Brendan's room, and I thought that it was genuine. I believe in Brendan. I think he's a good man, and he's a genuine man. And he was crying. And he goes, "Andrea, this is the most difficult decision of my career. I need a defender on the bench because Gary Moen, the captain, was physically not 100%. And then I was a bit probably harsh on him. I said, "Well," I said to him the first thing, "Well, you're ruining the best day of my life." But it was true.
Yeah.
But then again, Brendan, I'll be there to support the team and all the best, and I want us to get promoted. So just went back into the room, and then it was me crying. because you're not the same, Graham, to celebrate, you know, wearing a suit.
No.
That having your boots, doing the warm-up.
Even being in the bench on the pitch.
Exactly.
I know.
It wasn't the same feeling, but, you know, once the game finished, he comes to me and he says, Andrea, you are a Premier League player. You know, congratulations. I said, no, Brendan, congratulations.
That's a nice human touch.
Yeah, yeah. He was a family man, Brendan. He had a lot of problems as well. You know, a difficult life, and he has a big heart, and I'm still in contact with him, you know, and he was very honest with me, and this is something that I really appreciate, because once we got into the Premier League, the chances were limited as well, but he was always honest. Sometimes when he had to be harsh, he was, but I'm someone that takes things, if I think that they are fair and probably I'm not doing the right things, okay, you know, I'll take it.
You can process.
I can process it. Now, if I don't agree, I will tell you. Yeah. And with Brendan, I had this kind of relationship, you know, this confidence to say what I thought. And this is why now we have a really good relationship.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Our sponsors are Bet365, and they've asked, is Brendan Rodgers a future Premier League winning manager?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, well, he nearly got Liverpool, you know, champions. And I was really sad that, you know, obviously, to have... you remember that Gerrard, when he slipped, and then Chelsea scored, and they ended up losing that title. I didn't think Liverpool had the best team. But Brendan, you know, took the best out of those players, and they believed in him. And he's someone who, look at Leicester now, the way they're playing, what they're doing, he's got it. He's got it. He has something special in him, and he makes you believe in him. And one really good thing, if you're not playing, you look forward for the training sessions, even if you're not playing. And this is probably, if not the only manager I've had that had this, one of the few. Because when you're not playing, this is the most difficult part for a manager, to have players involved and, you know, ready to go and ready. So he made you hungry, and he made you wanting to train and prove yourself in the training ground, and he's a great coach.
What did he do in training if somebody shouted, get rid of it?
He stopped training. He stopped training once when one player was under pressure and he was rushing, and one of the teammates shouted, get rid of the ball, get rid of it. And he stopped it. He stopped it. He went, stop, stop, stop. If you say that again, you're out. You know, you're not in this team. So this is what Brendan's all about.
Wembley was tearful that day, and you almost lost an arm as well, didn't you? During the stress of that. Somebody punching your arm during the game?
Yes, the analyst, which is who works for Brendan now. I can't remember his name now. So,
no, but he's sitting next to you on the bench.
He's sitting next to me on the bench. That game was we were 3-0 up. Then Reading scores two. Then they hit the post. Gary Monk saves it from the line, clears it from the line. So I mean, the tension was huge. And I kept getting punched on the bench by the analyst. I ended up with a swollen arm, and but you know, it was worth it. It was worth it. At the end of the game, we hugged each other, and Chris was his name. But honestly, yeah. At the time, I didn't feel anything because I was deep into the game. But I ended up having this swollen arm and all this. You know, these bruises all over it, but
Andrea, top level football brings punishment.
Yeah, of course.
Problems.
Absolutely.
I'm really interested in this answer because Bet365 also asked me to ask you two things. How will the top four finish in La Liga this season? So it's a long way away, so it's a guess. And, you know, if it's an unfair question, I'll go first. But How do you think the top four finished this season at the end of La Liga?
For me, Graham, this season, at the start of the season, if I looked at the teams, I thought, well, Atletico Madrid will be challenging Barcelona for the title. Seeing how they started, I still think that Barcelona has it and will end up winning the La Liga. Even though Real Madrid, with all the problems they had, they are capable of overturning this kind of situations and winning games with quite ease. But I can't see them consistent enough. Now, Barca, without Messi, they started without Messi, physically in not top condition, struggling away from home. Once they get it right, well, they're still top of the league. So I'm assuming that once they get it right, for me, they are favourites to win it. So
one Barca?
One Barca. Then it will be either Real or Atletico Madrid. I'll go for Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and probably Sevilla. These are my top four. I wish probably Real Sociedad being one of the top four, but
because of their brand of football.
Yes, I love the way they play, and I love the players they have. A lot of left-footed, you know, talented players out there. So I can see myself being part of that team. So that's why I
can make a phone call if you want.
Not anymore.
And this before we finish, because we can't stop without talking about your love of Brighton and a mutual friend working for Gus Poyet, which is just must have been the experience of a lifetime. I'm really serious about this. This is because of how highly I rate what I listen to when I hear you doing TV analysis of football. Our sponsors, Bet365, want to know, what would you like to see and hear more of in football punditry or football analysis?
Well, obviously, for me, when I was watching TV and watching, you know, football programs, what I really like, it's the pure part of football. I mean, the tactical analysis, or not only that, also what really happens in the dressing room. Why is the coach picking this player? You know, the thought behind it. Because normally people sit down and see, well, you know, he's changed the formation. He should be playing this player, that player. So everyone, you know, sitting at home on the sofa is quite easy to be coaches. So when I see a TV program and I see people explaining why, you know, giving the reasons behind that a manager's decision or a tactical decision or a tactical change, this is what I really like to see. The insight, you know, what really happens in the dressing room, to give to the viewers something that they won't normally get because they haven't been into a dressing room. So, you know, being able to explain to them why things happen, what's the reason behind them, how they happen as well. You know, what's the thought process of a coach, you know, picking one player, you know, in front of the other, you know, making decisions, making the substitution. So this is what I really like. This is football. Mm. This is football. It's not like, no, he doesn't like him or he doesn't like his wife or no. You know, I really like the talking about football, pure football.
One of the things I think you're referring to is that the more I listen, we had a long conversation. Sometimes it was a conversation, sometimes it was just listening. With Miguel Cardoso, and one of his themes was how many multi-obstacles a player and a coach or a director of football must get over that people don't know about, they have no understanding about. Sometimes, without talking about Miguel's experience, sometimes clubs can be run in a really stupid way. And when you see the product on the grass on a Saturday or Sunday, you can like it or not, but very few people understand maybe how much rubbish has gone on from the club or the president or the trainer or the physio or the players or the agents or whatever it might be. There's so much to wade through to get a good performance.
Graham, that's the performance on the pitch. It's a reflection of what happens, you know, during the week, what happens in the club, you know, that people don't know. This is normal. This happens in every job, you know, but the life of a footballer, that's why, you know, I will never speak and I will never criticize a footballer in a way. I can talk about his performance and say, okay, he didn't play good or he played well or something like this, but I will never criticize a player because I know what it takes to be a footballer, and it's not easy. You know, there's a lot more lows than ups. There's more downs than ups. But once you get, you know, you get an up, you get a nice moment, the feeling that you get is so intense, is so nice, that all the bad moments, you know, are worth it. Because probably during my career, and this is my experience, I'm talking about myself, you know, I've had lots of injuries, I've had moments where I wasn't picked, moments where I thought I was going to give up and retire earlier. And now thinking back, I'm thinking how stupid I was now that I'm not playing. You know, I miss it every day. I miss, you know, for example, today it's a Thursday. And on a normal week, I would be thinking, well, on Saturday, who we got? We got Sheffield Wednesday. And I'm thinking about Sheffield Wednesday and I'm thinking about how am I going to play. I don't have that. I don't have that anymore. So now the weekends for me are not, you know, I don't have that, you know, that target. And it kills me mentally as well.
Let's say you don't have that fix.
Exactly.
Because it's a healthy addiction, but it's an addiction.
It's an addiction, yeah. And I'm addicted to the smell of the grass, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
And to coming into a dressing room, the banter, you know, being in an environment where there is problems because there are, you know, 25... players, every single one has a story, has a family, has problems. What I would like to see and what I would like to do is just to give an insight and to actually help people to realize that it's not that easy and there are things behind it that, you know, maybe not telling everything,
no,
but just, you know, giving some information that could help the viewers to see that, you know, the life of a footballer, obviously you see the 90 minutes of them on the pitch and you judge them for what they do, but there's so much more behind, and that people should get to know a little bit more.
I think you educate. I, as a consumer of football, I always want to learn. And I see so many professionals, managers or players, dialing it in. Here's my opinion, and that'll have to do for you. No good for me, thank you. If it's the opinion of somebody I really respect, then I'll take it. But I want depth. I want background. I want something that takes me from where I'm already at into knowledge I don't have, or even little details which make me go, oh, that sharpened up my thinking. And everybody deserves that. Everybody mm-hmm. deserves that on radio, on television. And our industry, journalism or broadcasting, needs to be better at it. But we need players, professional players like you, who want to educate, who want to say, okay, you'll have your own opinions, you can draw your own conclusions, but here's the reality. This is, if you don't understand these little details, then your picture
and
is incomplete.
And this is from my point of view, Graham, who I was a normal player. I didn't have a great career. I'm happy with the career I've had. It could have been better, it could have been worse, but this is my point of view from my experiences. So I will tell you what I think from what I've experienced before. Now, if you listen to a player who's played for Barca for many years, played in the Champions League, will have a different opinion from a different point of view because he's been, you know, on a higher level, on a higher scale. Mm. But what I normally talk about and what I like to talk about is what I see, you know, reflecting my own experiences. So, you know, if I see someone on the pitch doing something, you know, my first thought is, what would I, you know, what would I've done in that position, in that situation? This is what I see. This is what I say, what I explain. Sometimes I get to go on the radio and speak about Barcelona. And we have Pichi Alonso there. And he's played for Barca regularly. He scored a
Pichi Alonso played the semi-final of the 1986 European Cup when Steve Archibald was injured and scored a hat-trick.
A hat-trick against Göteborg.
3-0 down, 3-3
yes.
penalties.
And his view is completely different. And I like listening to him, you know, and I learn a lot from him. So you have him talking about, you know, some things, and then you have me from a different perspective talking about Barcelona, which I got to be very careful because they Graham, are extraordinary players, you know. I wasn't at that level, so I need to respect, you know, players of that level because I know how hard it is. I know how heavy the Barcelona shirt is. The Real Madrid shirt is, how difficult it is to play in La Liga. So what I want you to understand is that when I talk about football, you know, I do it with huge respect for the profession, mm-hmm. because obviously coaches, players, I know how hard it is. But then I do it from a perspective of Andrea Orlandi, a player who's played, you know, a few games in the Premier League, one game with Barça in La Liga, who's played mostly in the Championship. This is what I see. Using my own experiences. So
but your brain, you're, even with all the respect you've talked about, your brain and your eyes are good and your articulacy is good. You know, I can link you immediately back to Brendan, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's these are talents that really count. So when you speak with respect, that's fine.
Yeah.
But what comes out gradually, it won't matter the level you played at.
No, of course.
Because analysis is about different things, about how well did Arrigo Sacchi play?
Yeah.
So you're Arrigo Sacchi.
Yeah.
You're not just the Catalan David Beckham, but so and there are now a number of managers. I'm not a fantastic fan of Jose Mourinho, but you know his achievements are extraordinary. He wasn't a player.
Yeah,
of course, senior player.
Of course,
big achievements. So, but I understand the point. You don't want to be a coach, which I think is crazy. You're going to be a director of football at some club, hopefully Aberdeen. and when you're in charge of your club, I guess you know. Would you sign Gus Poyet as a, what's it like being so close to a whirlwind, a phenomenon like Gustavo Poyet?
I would definitely sign Gustavo Poyet, and when I've been asked about him, I've always said go and sign him without even think about. Don't blink twice, just sign him. He's enthusiastic. He's got so much charisma. He's a motivator. I mean, I played my best football for him because he knew what to say and when to say it. He's a clever man. His football knowledge is great. He gives you... Listen, most of the players were not that intelligent. So when we talk about tactics, especially managers that like to train tactically and do like 30 minutes, 1 hour sessions about how to set up the team... you know, I didn't like that too much because after 10 minutes, you kind of switch off. What Gus has, he gives you 3 or 4 ideas. He knows with who can actually do more, who can take more, who can learn more. So he uses his players wisely. And so when you go out on the pitch, you know what to do. Everyone knows exactly what he has to do.
Not an overload.
Exactly. Not an overload of anything. You know, the right amount of what you need to go out there and perform. You know, the videos before the games, it was only 3-minute videos, you know, about your strengths and weaknesses of the opposition team. And you used to go out there and probably when he was my manager at Brighton, playing at the Amex, you know, not knowing that we weren't going to win the game.
But he also is contagious, right? Because there's a love for life, there's a love for football, there's a love for winning. He's a very competitive man. And if as a leader, coach, manager, call it what you want, if you can make that contagious, that's a special quality, and he has it.
It is contagious, and I always say that you have managers that, you know, they finish the speech before the games and you kind of wake yourself up and say, okay, let's go out and play. With Gus, you wanted to bite your teammate next to you. It was like you had blood coming out of your eyes. And especially for a player like me, that I'm more relaxed, I'm more calm, you know, I'm not someone who loses the head. I take things, you know, more easily. But he had this, you know, and he gave me that, you know, that belief and that will to go out there and just, you know, I won't say kill, but die for him on the pitch and to give my 100%, not only for the club I was representing, but for Gus. So at one moment I was like a Gus soldier. I felt it. And I was gonna do anything for him. I was
That's
ready
a great
for
expression. I haven't heard the. So you've been in the Jack Army, But you're also a gus soldier.
Absolutely.
It's a great expression.
Yeah, yeah. I felt I was, and because he gave me so much that I thought that I was, that I owed him something as well. I don't know how to actually explain that.
But I hope people understand, because Gus has been in this series, long interview, beautiful interview, telling really deep things about his character, about his dad, about his lifestyle, about his attitude to football and management, and it comes across in oral form as well. But I think when I'm around him as well, that maybe I'm a little bit like him in my enthusiasm for life, but I find him, you know, contagious. If he's my leader in anything, it doesn't matter if it was like a guerrilla war or football or badminton or chess.
Graham, he called me. I was at Swansea with Laudrup, and he called me, and it was like when you go to prison and they ask you where have you been, what have you done, where were you at 10 p.m. on the 16th or whatever. He asked me everything. Who is your girlfriend? Do you have kids? What do you eat? You like partying? You like, so it was. He was asking me all sorts of questions for an hour. But I tell you one thing, after 1 minute, I wanted to sign for Brighton. Yeah. Obviously, he wanted to know more about me because he was doing his research, but I was going to do like, guys, you have me. I mean, you had me after 1 minute, you know. You don't need to go any further. I just want to come and play for Brighton and play for you.
And we'll finish in saying, you know, you had happy family times there. I think your younger daughter was maybe born in Brighton.
My younger daughter was born in Brighton, yes.
And you still have a huge love for the club, right?
I love it. I love Brighton. For me, leaving that club was a huge blow. I would have stayed there forever. Obviously, football is a funny business sometimes. And there was one person there that is not anymore at the club. They didn't think the same, and I understood that decision, but it really hurts. And to be fair, since I left, I've only been there once, back to Brighton, because it brings back memories. And not only did I play for the club I love, I had friends as well. So I went out on the pitch with friends, and this is something that I didn't have at other teams. So I was playing with my friends, you know, to get into the Premier League, playing for something really special. And I felt I was part of something special. So for me, leaving, especially after a season where I got injured, I had an injury again, I made it back and played my worst game, was my last one, against Derby.
But that was out with your control because of injury.
Yeah, but...
You reached and you risked, or the club reached and risked for two games in close succession when you weren't physically ready.
No, I wasn't ready, but then again, people might say, well, why did you play?
I have no time for that.
No,
what are you going to do? Like, you're going to, if you're ruined and you know you can't play, then I know you'd have said, listen, it's impossible. But sometimes, like, for example, the people that you've been talking about, Iniesta plays Rome, and in the film we made, we hear Darren was saying, I literally do not know how he played. I literally do not know how I played. And they won.
Yeah.
Somehow.
No, absolutely, yeah. And my teammates actually asked me to play as well. So
what are you going
to
do?
No,
play.
Of course. But, Graham, I have this insight that I let them down, and I really wanted to give them something back, and I didn't have the chance. This was a big moment for me, and on that moment I should have left... I wanted to leave England. Then I had the chance to go to Blackpool, and it was I love the fans of Blackpool as well. Beautiful fans, great fans. They really helped us in such a difficult season. But for me, after Brighton, you know, I should have left England. It was difficult to stay for me because I couldn't take it. I couldn't take the decision of the club. It was hard. It was hard because you see players wanting to leave, and when you have a player that's committed and wants to stay, and you just think, okay, you've been injured this season. How many games you played? 18, I think I played that season. Not good enough, go. You're 29, 30, I can't remember my age at the time. Just, we don't need you. We have... So you get treated a bit like a piece of meat. You know, when you're nice and red, you know, we buy you. When you start looking not so well, we don't want you anymore. So it was hard, but still... My love for the club hasn't changed, and the fans still love me, which is overwhelming. And
they saw football with you and your teammates that they hadn't experienced often in their history. And they also saw, I think they savoured exactly what you've described, a group of friends going out to fight to win together, but also playing, I would say, under Oscar Good, but under Gus, maybe some of the best football the Championship has seen, that Brighton has seen. And you're privileged to have played in two teams, both Swansea and Brighton, that redefined the way that football can be played in England, Wales, yes, whatever you say. So I'm going to close by saying maybe some of the magic that you've had in your life or I've had in my life, we can conjoin, and we both know the owner, and maybe one day your director of football role is at the Amex, and you're making sure that Brighton are on the up because you're controlling who they sign and who they sell. And when they sell the meat, it will be in a more humane, maybe a vegan way, right?
Okay, yeah. That would be a dream, Graham. Thank you.
It's within our power together. This has been The Big Interview. Everybody listening to The Big Interview, I told you. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
Pleasure.
I do hope you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios, our members who support us. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 per month, you'll get all our content entirely ad-free and ahead of its release on the main feed. Please go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast, and we'll blow virtual kisses towards you. Thank you.